Hey, listeners out there, thank you for tuning in to Dash Radio, now live. It's Almighty Ballin' NBA Show, and I'm here today with none other than Larry H. Russell. For the first half of the show, we're going to be talking about Green, and no, that doesn't mean we're bringing on fellow Dash Radio host Snoop Dogg. It just means that we're talking about the Boston Celtics. After that, I'm going to bring in Jordan Malley, host of the Debatables, but for now, honored, excited, thrilled to be with Larry H. Russell of Celtics Beat. Larry, thanks for coming on.
Spins of history. That's the first thing that I noticed on the show, Chris.
Oh, wait, say that again.
You were talking about the no Beethoven introduction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
Symphony number 5.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to try something new for Dash.
Okay.
You know?
A little more recent.
It had a cool funky beat, you know? But right. I'm testing
very
stuff out.
Very pleasing to the mind, either way. But once again, of course, I haven't said this. We're now full 60 seconds in. I am thrilled to be here, even under such circumstances of talking about the Boston Celtics season, which is on the verge of ending.
Yeah, and we were talking beforehand about our disagreement about that fundamentally. But before we get into that, I wanted to tell everyone out there, make sure that you download the Dash Radio app so that you can listen to excellent shows like this live. And make sure you go follow Larry. All right, I'm going to try. We talked about this beforehand. CLNS_Larry, right?
CLNS_LHR.
Oh, my gosh.
It's much easier for you as you continuously misspell my last name, not putting in the two L's, so we have just three letters for you.
I wasn't
at CLNS_LHR.
You know, I wasn't joking when I said that I was a spelling bee champion. That's a real thing. And still,
more,
I just can't get it right.
More recently than the last Beethoven Symphony No. 5 being released. That is correct, right?
I'm actually not quite sure. It was a long time ago, so maybe not. Well, so first, I wanted to go ahead and start with, the reason why, and by the way, this is our inaugural show live on Dash, but there's a reason why I didn't just bring on someone from the Almighty Baller Radio Network, and instead I brought on Larry because we've got some great news to talk about. Larry is going to be broadcasting live on Almighty Baller Radio Celtics Hour. It's going to be a blend of some of CLNS's great Celtics content and the greatest and most downloaded. You have a whole intro thing that you do, but the most popular Celtics podcast on the net. It's going to be broadcasting at 7 Eastern, right?
On Tuesday. Thrilled to do it. Thrilled that you asked me. I've always been such a fan of yours, Chris. The amount of effort and hard work that you've put in, even for me to see that from afar in the information age, when you can't see much in the information age outside of a blue screen, but to see the amount of hard work and effort you're in, thrilled to take part in it. Yes, Tuesday, 7 o'clock. We're going to see how this thing runs on Dash. I am very excited for it. The Celtics Hour, so that will be my show, as you referenced. Yeah, I can slap myself on the back a little bit. Yes, number one podcast on iTunes dedicated to the NBA's winningest franchise. And also
the
coverage CLNS has at the playoff games, which we hope we're going to go a little bit longer than just possibly this weekend we would like. But CLNS Radio at the TD Garden on the road. Pre- and post-game coverage live on the parquet floor out in Chicago. Locker room. Videos, press tables, et cetera, that will all be within the 1 hour, which we will air on, yes, Tuesday, 7 a.m. Eastern time. I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait either. I'm definitely going to be tuning in, not only because it's, you know, my radio station that I'm operating, but also because there might not be a lot of Celtics coverage left, and I think we have to cherish it while it's here. I mean, there's going to be a lot to talk about before the
NBA
draft.
For us, there is.
Yeah.
We go all 52. We go all 52, 365. If you're not doing that now in the information age, now in the digital age, you are joining Beethoven in the dustbins of history. Third time we reference that.
Yeah. Well, you're maybe falling behind the times, sort of like Danny Ainge fell behind the trade deadline and not making a move. I want to start with the Celtics. The striking thing to me, and then I actually want to get into real basketball, but I just want to complain for a second as an NBA fan. Why not like Dwayne Dedmon? Why not, you know, JaVale McGee? Just someone simple, like someone better than Tyler Zeller. And This is my only complaint.
I'm jumping in and interrupting you already from what I've heard and reference. And I did the trade deadline show with the preeminent Celtics insider, Steve Volpet, on Celtics Beat on February 25th, whatever that, you know, that day showed that show. But it is in the archives. And he said they were pretty much all their attention and focus on was, you know, Jimmy Butler and Paul George. And when those are the phone calls that are dominating the lines, it's tough to make a phone call or take other phone calls for players. And what you were referencing, PJ Tucker, who was actually a small forward, was a name that they, what Steve told us on the show was that, you know, and I actually was the one who alluded to this, and Steve said, yeah, you can, you know, draw a conclusion if you want, but I don't know. I think after Phoenix got raped on the Isaiah Thomas trade 2 years ago, they weren't exactly in a rush to make another trade with the Celtics again, even though the Celtics may have had a better package than Toronto. But I don't know. I mean, they are on the verge of getting swept out by the eighth seed. You can't really tell me, well, if they had this role player, that would have changed everything.
Right. Yeah. No, I definitely do feel that way. And honestly, I'm looking at this series and it's possible that Danny Ainge didn't just go ahead and pull the trigger on a move, because even with Jimmy Butler, there's still, I think, some fundamental holes that are being exploited by a Bulls team that isn't that great. And so I want to start out just by setting the stage and just by saying my thought with this, and I wish I had a super hot take to give. My thought is right in the middle, where half of it is there's some clear strategic advantages to having Robin Lopez when your best rebounder on the court most of the time is Al Horford, maybe Kelly Olynyk. I mean, it seems like to me that the Celtics are essentially making Robin Lopez look like Hakeem Olajuwon, and then they're making Rajon Rondo look like Rajon Rondo from a few years
2009.
Ago.
2009.
Right, yeah, and I think that there's reasons for that. I mean, as great as Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas are, they've got real flaws in their game. It's like they're not very leveled players, if that makes sense.
The Celtics they benefited during the regular season from the fact that generally teams aren't going to strategize against them for one specific game. Each and every team that they would play would just sort of most of the time, and this is just in general, run out their specific game plan every single night. Hey, this is what we do well. See if you can beat us. Okay. Teams just don't really have the time, all the travel, the back-to-backs, et cetera, to change game plans on a game-by-game basis the way you can do in the NFL, where it's a week-to-week thing, and the way you can now doing the NBA playoffs when you're playing the same team for anywhere between 4 to 7 games. Once a team like the Bulls, and I referenced this on our show with Coach Nick last week, and even Coach Nick, who went into the series saying, you know, Celtics, no doubt about it, 5 games. He comes out of that, you know, our conversation in 45 minutes with his mind completely changed in the series. And then he's in my boat as well, where he actually put up a video on his YouTube channel where, no doubt about it, the Bulls, this thing's, you know, wrapped up, money in the bank. But Chicago being able to just visually see the Celtics' weaknesses every single game and then just attack it. At the end of the regular season, there was a game the Celtics played against the Cavaliers. I think most of us who follow the NBA, even, you know, outside of the Celtics and the Cavs, know what I'm talking about. And that's about, I think, an April 5th-ish matchup that aired on ESPN. Big game, you know, was going to decide the number one seed. The Cavs went at right at the Celtics' weakness, and they sent two guys to the offensive boards on basically every single chance that they could get. That was the 75th game of the season. I remember just thinking to myself, like, why aren't teams doing this more? The Celtics just flat out are a terrible rebounding team. They cannot rebounding. It's, you know, players on the team. I do think a little bit is coaching. That's a story for another day. We can go on for about 45 minutes about that. The next night, Atlanta did the same thing. They sent a few guys to the offensive boards, and the Celtics just really can't do anything about that, especially at this point of the year. We've backed off it. I think they played Charlotte a few nights after that. Charlotte has the old philosophy of, hey, get back on defense. You know, no one really attacked the glass. Make sure you set your defense. That's the best way to do it, according to the Atlanta analytics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But here we are in the playoffs. The Bulls have always been a very good rebounding team throughout the course of the season. They've beaten the Celtics on the boards numerous times during the year. There were a few games, both out in Chicago, where they out-rebounded the Celtics by 10-plus both times. I was pretty sure, convinced, that the Bulls would take such a strategy, and if not Chicago, another team that were able to see the Celtics' weaknesses on a game-by-game basis. And, I think that I'm with you. This is they have some strategic advantages on that end. It's a chessboard. If you're looking at the chessboard right now, the Bulls have all the pieces. The Celtics just don't have the right ones, and the ones they do have are a couple of pawns flanked off on the left side of the board, and their king is just out of control, and Chicago has got everything, and they're sort of closing on in at this point.
So I'm going to provide the counter argument partially so that we have a good first live radio show, and I think that we should yell at each other for at least a little bit.
You do need to play a little bit of a Tucker Carlson contrarian here as a host.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm all about conflict. So here's the thing that I think is ultimately going to end up happening, and whether or not the Celtics actually win the series, I do think that things are going to come back to the mean. So it's not just that the Bulls are crashing the board. It's that they're collapsing into the paint on these Isaiah Thomas drives, which is honestly what has killed them on defense over the course of the entire year, because what I've seen so far from the Celtics is, again and again, Jay Crowder just whiffing, Marcus Smart just whiffing. And Marcus Smart, I think, honestly, I think his defensive advantages in this series probably outweigh his offensive inability to hit a corner three, because I think that if the Celtics... I think the reason why Brad Stevens, genius coach, right? Mad genius, boy genius. I think the reason why he hasn't made the adjustments that everyone in the media is suggesting that he should make is because he is doing the thing that by the books, by the analytics is better. And the shot chart data is basically suggesting, I mean, his shots, these three-pointers, especially from the corner, which, by the way, the Celtics were the third best corner three-point shooting team in the league last year. They're just not going in despite everyone being wide open. I think they missed 14 wide open corner threes last game. So I think you just cross your fingers and hope that they start going in and hope. And if that happens, they can absorb the disadvantages. Does that make sense?
And that was a big question mark going into the series. And I was thinking about it as well. Following that April 5th loss, I believe, I'm not sure entirely on that date, but it was that final game against Cleveland in the regular season. That was really the only real marquee, you know, borderline playoff game that the Celtics have played in the regular season in the Brad Stevens era, being that game that was supposedly going to be for the number one seed. And in that game, that's exactly what happened, is they got a bunch of really good looks and they just didn't make shots. And I said, okay, is this a one-game thing or is this a precursor of things to come? And this is very telling about a Celtics team that may not respond as well, comma, yet to pressure. Now it's actually pretty interesting. One, we do know after these games that, no, they're not responding well to pressure. They haven't responded well to pressure in this series. And you can go back to the Atlanta series as well. I think that was a different team, et cetera, but they couldn't make anything in that series. But one thing I think is that will be a little interesting is now the series is going to be shifting to Chicago tomorrow night. The pressure is off the Celtics, and that's not a good thing, actually. But it's all now focused on the Chicago Bulls just being able to wrap up this series. So maybe with a little pressure off the Celtics in game three, unfortunately, and this is a real optimistic look, some of those shots will fall. But then again, of course, two, I wouldn't count on it for one. Boston has not performed well in such situations. And for any historical reference, I don't know if any of the listeners are aware of this, the United Center, and even going back to the old Chicago Stadium back in the early 1990s, so I've been following the team now for 25 years, anywhere they play in Chicago serves as a Teutoburg Forest for the Celtics. They simply have not played there where well for the quarter century I follow the team. I'd be surprised if that would change in two playoff games.
Yeah, and if you're going to make an argument for returning to the norm, the Celtics had a better record than the Bulls. But, I mean, you now have to win four games, but the Bulls only have to win two. And
I don't have to win them.
Oh, right. Man, I did this last... I do this every time. I can't help it, you know? It's an NBA show. But the Celtics have to win four games, and the Bulls have to win two, and that is different than just going in with a clean slate.
Of course.
Yeah.
Boston's got to win four of the next five, and as I laid out on the chessboard, I wouldn't count on that.
Right.
What we see on the board.
Yeah, so I do feel like a lot of the things with the Celtics are going to kick back into gear. It's interesting how much I do think, and sometimes I think that this aspect of the game is trumped up because it's sort of a remnant of the old media, as it were, the less in-depth and more into narrative and storyline and stuff. But I think that I think that I can actually say that the Celtics are sort of spooked a little bit. I think that the Bulls are actually in their head. And normally I sort of chuckle at that because I just, you know, these guys are professionals paid millions of dollars to play basketball. That doesn't exist typically.
No, I disagree with that. The human mind is far weaker than you think. Well, believe me. I actually confess to getting spooked over absolutely worthless things in life. So I would figure the same way applies to players. And I've actually been reading a lot of books on it. I guess this is where I can do a little audiblepodcast.com/try now shout out.
Audible.com.
Read books up on neurology.
But you mean,
but there is something that there is to that. It's just almost impossible to measure it in an intrinsic way. We're not there yet. Give Kevin Pelton about 7 or 8 years, and I'm sure he'll be able to do so and put in about 6,000 words on an insider piece.
I think what you meant was audibletrial.com/almighty, right? Is that what you were saying?
Okay. All right. Okay. Put our plugs in.
All right. Well, yeah, I get that. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just that since I can't quantify it and let me rephrase it. It's not uncommon for, I think, a team to get the mental edge. But for example, I don't think that the Warriors crumbled last year in the finals. I think that, you know, LeBron went supernova and Draymond Green was suspended and all this stuff. But the particular mental edge I wanted to talk about and what I'm looking forward to talking to Jordan about in the second half of the show is, I'm not sure if you read some of the quotes from the media about what on court and off court Rajon Rondo has been expressing. So off court, of course, Avery Bradley heard him saying that they gave up. And then on court, Brad Stevens said that the way that he was calling out defensive plays like a linebacker was quote unquote clairvoyant. And I can't believe it. It's Rondo all man. Why does Rondo just disappear and then come back? It's the weirdest thing.
Well, I guess he's there when it really counts. I mean, would you rather have there's always a lament of, oh, he plays so well in the regular season, but he wilts in the playoffs. Now actually one individual who I don't want to turn the show and, you know, Rajon Rondo unsolving that mystery. But I mean, if you're going to have one extreme or the other, would you rather have the regular season stats guy or the guy who plays a little bit better on quote unquote national TV in playoff games? But anyways, Avery Bradley does have a little bit of a tendency to say too much. I'm not sure that was the best thing to say, no matter how accurate it was. Of course, too, that's the type of material that is on the CLNS Radio YouTube channel, since we have all the interviews after the games with the coaches and the players in high definition. But Avery does have a little bit of a tendency to say too much. Of course, we here in the media, and we love that, and we're able to provide that, especially for audience. But as a fan or as anyone with an emotional or vested interest in the team or players themselves, I don't think I have to go any further than I just did.
Yeah, so I guess it's just a question to me of if he can keep that up. And one thing that I'm interested to see is, can the Bulls – so it seems to me like if you're dealing with a blend of mental, psychological, I guess, weakness or whatever you want to call it, or edge, I guess, for the Bulls, and you think that it's sort of a blend of just hitting shots, if – I want to see if the Celtics on their end can just start hitting shots, and then the Bulls, once they start reeling, can they take a punch? And during the regular season, they really weren't able to. And, you know, I understand certainly from your perspective, having watched the Bulls get swept like last year in the playoffs against the Hawks. But, I mean, the Bulls to me seem even more like they have potential.
I don't think the Bulls made the playoffs last year. Or
by the Hawks. The Celtics got swept by the Hawks last year, right?
Is that the year? They lost in six, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, still. Still. And, you know, that's another aspect of things. Isaiah Thomas, you know, I certainly don't want to argue for it on his part being mental. But what I would say is that some of the ways that Rondo is defending Isaiah Thomas has really been really smart. Like, Rondo's been a really smart defensive player. And I think part of it is, you know, when Rondo went to the Mavericks, I remember Rick Carlisle quizzing Rondo about the playbook and him getting 100 on this quiz and all this stuff happened. And of course, that was pre everything going nuclear. But I think that Rondo has a propensity when he wants to sit down and memorize front to back a playbook and know all the schemes and like know everything and watch the film to go into a series and just sort of be clairvoyant, like what Brad Stevens said. And I think that basically during the regular season, he doesn't put in that effort. And then in the playoffs, he does. And that's the playoff Rondo phenomena.
Well, we've seen it here in Boston for, there was a, you know, the 6 year stretch that he was here. Although of course that final year he did have, or excuse me, the second to last year, he did have that ACL injury, but that was the case. I remember a year, it was 2012. And he would just absolutely have games where he wouldn't even, he'd have a goose egg. He'd have 0 points. He'd be 0 of 11 with like 10 assists. And you just say, you know what, he would have, yeah, he would no show in Sacramento. And then on national TV against the Knicks, there was some crazy game. Actually, there was a game I remember on Sunday afternoon against Chicago, an ABC game. He had something, a ludicrous stat line, like 35, 20, and I mean, literally 20 rebounds and 14 assists, something like that. Had some great games in the playoffs. Although, albeit, I will say one thing about Rondo. He was never the most clutch player, I guess, so to speak. He was very ineffective at the end of games. All the advanced analytics did show it in terms of how he played the last 5 minutes, how he shot. He used to have a terrible tendency of missing uncontested layups at the end of games. But there's no question that he has a different gear in the playoffs. It's just there's so much of a body of evidence now over the – how many years he's been in the league now? 11 years, 10 years, and he's in all the playoffs that he's been. Incredible body of evidence to show that.
Yeah, and you know that's actually maybe an interesting place to start to go before we wrap up. When you think about, you know, those clutch possessions where a guy like Rondo struggles to finish at the basket, he is up against a point guard though who I think also has, maybe for slightly different reasons, the same problem at the end of games. Not this season though, right? Where
no.
his
best height, offensive player right. in the NBA in the fourth quarter.
Right, and that tapered off a little bit, you know, by the end of the season. But I think that this, I think that he's gotten a lot better offensively. And I think that that's undeniable. But now that the defensive intensity is ramped up, that's sort of neutralized. And I think he might be sort of back at square one. And well, not square one, but like square five instead of square
I also,
10.
Chris, I got to jump in. I wouldn't jump on him entirely. He actually still played pretty well in game one. He wasn't amazing in game two, but he still, you don't want to use this as a crutch of an excuse, but you know where I would get there. I mean, he is playing a little bit under bizarre circumstances.
Yeah, and that actually gives the whole series to me a weird pallor because, you know, just the whole discussion about the Bulls having a mental edge on the Celtics, that to me seems like a really sensitive thing to be touching on. You know, it does feel weird to be saying that because if you're imposing this like mental, God, it's
completely relevant though. And no one could say, oh, well, once you get there and they're in the basketball court, that's sort of your sanctuary, blah, 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 blah. Playing professional sports or doing anything where you need to put in incredible, all the amount of focus that you have requires as such. And it's impossible for something like that to not drift in your mind. And if it drifts in your mind, that can take you a little bit. I mean, just, you lose the focus and the concentration. I know what it does for me in anything that I do where I put almost all the sorts of concentration in. If I ever, and I didn't even want to get into having to deal with the type of adversity that he did, especially with how bad I am dealing with that adversity, but I don't want to talk about that individually. But you can't, once again, this is something we hate doing, I guess, in the media now when there's this big backlash of really not discussing something where unless you can't quantify it and put it in numbers and have everybody, retweet this awesome stat that you put out, say, oh, well, that's the reason why, et cetera, et cetera. But because you can't quantify the impact of something like that happening on Isaiah Thomas, even you know that if something like that is clearly there and clearly having such an impact, I guess there's a little bit of refrain from doing so. But it's clearly something that has to be acknowledged in one way or another in terms of if you know, anyone who is looking at this series, which I guess we all are if we're listening and talking on this show.
Yeah, well, I think literally everyone in the world is probably listening to this. I'm pretty sure that that's how Dash works. But
the millions and millions.
To me, it seems interesting, and this will be your reaction to this, I guess, is how we'll lead out. It seems like the parallel series to me is the Thunder-Rockets series over in the Western Conference because it I there's clearly like a mental thing going on, right? And it's so interesting looking at that or watching that Rockets Thunder game there at the end, or the most recent one yesterday. There's sort of something about that interview that Russell Westbrook had after the game, when someone was like, "What? How do you feel about getting that 50-point, the first 50-point triple double in playoff history?" And he's like, "Nothing. It's all about the game." That seems like it's sort of posturing. So there is sort of this mental comparison, but also it sort of shows the weaknesses of a team where you have this like drive and kick centric guard who gets into the paint and creates disturbances, and then you get to the playoffs and you realize that the transition defense is going to ramp up, and then on top of that, you have to rely on guys like Andre Roberson. And man, I'm sort of worried about Jay Crowder. Are the 3-point shooters on the Celtics just? I mean, I don't know. It's strange, you know, when they're not hitting their shots, that team, the Celtics just aren't going to be good.
Tune in to find out if they will hit their shots.
Yeah, and you can tune in every 7 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday to the Celtics Hour, hosted, collaborated, mishmashed together by Larry H. Russell, only on Almighty Baller Radio. You've already found it, but just in case you don't have it on your phone yet, make sure you go download it. Make sure that you get the app on your phone. Make sure that you go to dashradio.com. But also, don't forget to go to almightyballer.com. And hey, clnsradio.com, right?
That is such so, Chris. We would certainly love to have plenty of interviews and footage as audio in the Celtics Hour throughout the NBA playoffs. Alas, there is still a lot of coverage that we do here at CLNS. So we will still have plenty of interviews with the coaches and the players and whatnot leading up to the offseason. But the Celtics sure would make it a lot easier for us if they were playing playoff games to the point where at least we as expected them to at least make it to May. But that is certainly up in the air right now. But we will be there every Tuesday regardless for Dash Radio listeners.
Yeah, and make sure you continue to listen to the number one downloaded Celtics podcast on planet Earth, Celtics Beat. Larry, thanks for being my first guest on live radio ever.
Happy to be a part of your maiden voyage, Chris, here on Dash.
All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot. I'll talk to you later. And now I'm going to be bringing in another guest, this time straight from the Almighty Baller Radio Network, not a transplant from another awesome network, great digital media provider, CLNS. Always been great to work with them, but always also been great to work with Jordan Malley. Jordan Malley, host of The Debatables. He's going to be coming on here in a second to talk about the biggest turnaround team, I think, in NBA history. If you've listened to his show, if you haven't listened to his show, you know, tune into Dash. Schedule coming soon. And download it, of course, iTunes Store, Stitcher, everywhere else where fine podcasts are found. But if you have had the pleasure of listening to The Debatables, you might not get the most optimistic take on the Chicago Bulls. But I'm going to go ahead and bring him on, see if he still feels that way. And Jordan, what's it like? What's it like for you right now to be a Chicago Bulls fan, especially a pessimistic one?
Chris, Bulls 2-0. I got to say one thing and one thing only. Take that for data, because the Bulls going 2-0 in this series, nobody projected it. I didn't project it. Certainly, if you watched this team the entire season, there's no way you could have possibly predicted something like this to happen. And I'm as baffled as many Bulls fans are out there. And we talked a lot about that on our newest episode today, where it was like this is all of a sudden gelling after 82 games of a regular season that seemed to be like that could be transitioned into a 30 for 30. And I mean, they're continuing that storybook right now with this 2-0 lead.
Wow. I listened to your episode right after game one, and most of the episode was ripping on the Bulls, but now game two, okay. Well, so you're bought in. I don't blame you. I think that, you know, me and Larry, or Larry and I, just discussed a lot of the reasons why the Bulls do have a lot of the edge on the Celtics. It at least seems that is the case. Well, okay. What do you want to think? How do you feel about the fact that I think the number one biggest factor in this series has been Rajon Rondo just dominating?
You know what? It's awesome. And I will say this. Beginning of the season, when Rondo was brought in, if you listen to any shows that I was on there or even some of the pieces that I wrote, it was Rondo's going to be a circus. He's a ticking time bomb. This is going to explode the Bulls. This makes absolutely no sense to bring him in. The more and more as the season progressed and the more I realized a lot more about Rajon Rondo and kind of the guy he is off the court and kind of what he does for a locker room. And from an outside perspective, and I can even attest to this when he was in Sacramento or even Boston, Dallas, wherever you want to talk about, he had issues. But with this young core Bulls teams, and especially when Butler and Wade made it about them two versus everyone else on the team, I think that's when Rondo was like, hey, guys, I've got a championship ring. You know, I was once the assist leader in the NBA. I mean, I was a dominant point guard for a lot, and you guys are leaving me out and then kind of just tossing me with the young guys. And I think that's where he grasped a lot of maturity, I guess, this season. And it's hard to talk about maturity with Rondo at times, but I think it's amazing. And I think there's nothing better than what he wants to do as far as going into Boston and beating the crap out of them and showing them, you know what, we've got three stars here on this team that can make a lot more noise than some of these other teams in the playoffs. And it took them 82 games to do that.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to start. You said three stars. I think we all know that they're not just three stars. They're three alphas. It's good that we started with Rondo. I think that Rondo, no, that's a little hot of a take. Jimmy Butler's been more important, but I feel like each of the three pieces of this alpha squad, alpha team, right, has put in their own performance. I do feel like, though, Rondo's, to me, seems like the least sustainable, mostly because a lot of point guards look like superstars when Isaiah Thomas is defending them.
That's true. And I'm not a stats guy, but I will say this about Jimmy Butler. I'm going to pose the question to you. Do you know the last player on the Bulls to have as high of a win share as Jimmy Butler does this season? Last player on the Bulls to do it, to have a higher rating than he does.
Tony Kukoc.
not exactly, Kerr. But I was surprised. Derrick Rose actually had a lower win share during his MVP season when the Bulls went to the Eastern Conference Finals.
That was a fake MVP.
Jimmy, yeah, then what'd you say?
No, nothing. You're hearing things.
Are you a Dwight Howard stan? Somebody who thinks Dwight Howard should have won the MVP that year?
I think I'm for Shaq, actually.
But anyway, Michael Jordan was the last guy to do it in 97-98. Jimmy Butler, 13.8 win shares. And to me, I like to take some of these stats that basketball doesn't seem to use a whole lot, kind of baseball-wise, where baseball uses like WAR and wins above replacement. So to me, Jimmy Butler, he's the third best in win shares this year behind James Harden and Rudy Gobert. So another thing I have to pose to Celtics fans is you can't sit there and tell me that Jimmy Butler would make an instant impact on that team. I mean, you've got pairing him with Isaiah Thomas, and why the Boston Celtics didn't try harder to go out and pair another superstar on that team. And we've seen it time and time again every single year that you can't just have one guy that's a superstar, and Isaiah Thomas being a bona fide superstar with just one season. I mean, you've got to pair him with other pieces. And I don't understand what the front office was doing by sitting back at the deadline, and then now they're looking at this team and going, we're a one seed and we're getting our heads beat in by the Chicago Bulls, who hung on and got a playoff spot in the 82nd game.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's probably – I think that both sides of the whole Danny Ainge thing probably don't give enough credence to the other. I look at the Bulls team – or the Celtics team, rather, and I think to myself, I'm not sure that – just adding, I mean, they'd be better with Jimmy Butler, but I mean, the big issue to me strikes me that they don't, I mean, they're playing Tyler Zeller out there because they just don't have an answer on the boards. Now, I think if somehow this offseason, and I have this insane dream scenario where the Celtics get Gordon Hayward from the Jazz and the Jazz decide to blow it up and that they want the number one pick from the Celtics, so begrudgingly they move Rudy Gobert as well to the Celtics for the number one pick and Jay Crowder. And then they trade for Paul George.
This sounds like a dream that I had about the Bulls, where I said the Bulls lose in four straight. They fire Gar Packs. They trade Jimmy Butler to the Celtics. They get the number one pick. They hope that the Sacramento lands between 11 and 14. They draft a superstar out of a college, somebody they can develop. They get another pick with their own pick, and then they just keep piling on here. And it's a dream shot. It was a pipeline dream. And now, obviously, with these two wins the Bulls got against the Celtics, there's no possible way Gar Packs is heading out of town. So that's kind of where I want to say, and I want to defend myself first for being a pessimistic Bulls fan, because yeah, Chicago fans have this reputation of being fans that rag on their team more than they do on the opponent and are overly critical. But I think the bar was set high when they brought six championships in, and people talk about this all the time. The Bulls haven't been to that point since, and it's kind of waiting around and seeing like what's the next move here. And for me, I just wanted the team to pick a direction. Like, if you're going to tank, then full on tank, get rid of everybody and let's start fresh. If you're not going to do that, then don't tell me you're not going to build around Jim. Or you're not going to build apart with Jimmy Butler. You're going to build with him. Like, what does that even mean? Build with Jimmy Butler. Like, you're saying you've got a superstar on your team, but yeah, he's not a superstar where you can go to a national or go to an NBA finals. And so to me, I don't even think Gar Packs knows really what they're doing. I mean, and that's clearly evident with the Cameron Payne trade.
Man, here you are talking negatively about a team that is two wins over the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Man, you're incorrigible. I mean, like, this is my radio network, and you're here. You're probably turning off all the Bulls fans from listening to The Debatables on AlmightyBaller.com and Almighty Baller Radio. All right, third alpha. So what's up with Dwayne Wade hitting playoff threes?
I have no idea. It's blowing my mind, because 19 for 26 in the last 2 years from three-point range, like, that's unheard of for Dwayne Wade. And I'm interested with Dwayne Wade too, because the first two games of this series, I don't know what's going on with him, whether he's still hurt or even if he did really have an injury, or like, I mean, there's conspiracy theories going around with the Bulls where he didn't really have this major injury that they're talking about, where he was supposed to be out for the rest of the season, that it was more of Dwayne Wade needs rest because he's old and we're just going to say he had an injury and he's going to come back in the last couple games of the season. I don't know. You take that with a grain of salt, whether you want to or not. But I look at Wade when he's on the floor, and I said this after game one. I thought it was weird that when him and Rondo were on the floor at the same time, they weren't gelling in that first game. And then the second game, they come out and they're playing a lot better together. So if Wade can, I don't know. I don't know how much is left in him. And offensively, yeah, he'll help. But defense, he's kind of a killer. And so if Robin Lopez can keep going down there and putting the Celtics in body bags as far as going on the glass, I mean, they're going to have no problem. I mean,
they're not going to have problems against the Celtics.
and even if they match up against the Wizards, I think their rebounding matches up in favor of the Bulls. If they go and end up advancing in this round and going and playing the Wizards, I think they got another favorable matchup there.
Well, I mean, first, I think that it's going to end up, well, the Bulls are taking an awful gamble, and I mean awful like a serious gamble that, you know, maybe is the right choice for a team that isn't as good as their opponent in like a classical sense. So what they seem to be doing when Isaiah Thomas drives is they all collapse in the paint and force him to kick out. Now, that's a great move if you're the Houston Rockets and you're defending the Thunder. The Celtics are I was just saying this to Larry. The Celtics are the third best corner shooting team in the league, and they're making a real gamble that, you know, Jay Crowder, who's been shooting 40%, that Avery Bradley, that Isaiah Thomas, even off ball, like that's been working out. But if you look at the numbers, the Celtics have missed 14 wide open threes, and that I even if it happens for the rest of the series with the Celtics, which I'm not sure it will, but the odds are in your favor now, it's not going to happen against Bradley Beal and Otto Porter.
I don't think so either. And John Wall. Yeah, you're going to have to defend John Wall, and putting the pressure on Jimmy Butler to guard a guy like that, it's going to be tough. And it's a completely different matchup from what the Celtics team too is. And whatever you want to do with this as far as chemistry going on with the Celtics too. Now, I heard a lot of really awful takes from guys on national radio shows and media, and no, it wasn't Colin Cowherd. Fortunately for you, So there was, I don't know who was talking. I think it was Tim Legler the other night talking about Isaiah Thomas and how the situation is kind of, it almost, the way it was coming off to me was that he was saying this is a burden to the team and the burden of the Celtics being a number one seed, and that him not being focused completely, and you can't blame him for not, is the reason why the Celtics are going to lose. And he's like, well, game three, you know, they're a couple more days away from the tragedy that happened. I would hope that they would get over it at this point. I'm like, dude, his sister just died like less than a week ago, and you're just telling him to get over it because to play basketball? Like, dude, come on. So some of these takes have been awful. I can see where they're coming from as far as chemistry with the team, but like a lot of missteps with this whole blaming the chemistry of the Celtics when really it's been the on-court play and a lot of guys not stepping up for them.
Yeah, it's sort of a weird narrative because I think that, you know, there is a part of the media that's looking at it like that. And I was just talking about arguing the mental edge versus the psychological edge. You know, I don't really know as far as Isaiah Thomas. I think forcing him to make a lot of hard decisions, I think Rondo is defending him in really interesting ways, especially coming off of screens. He's sort of attaching himself to his hip, but like sagging way off as if it looks like Isaiah Thomas is going to drive. And if Isaiah Thomas is going to take over, it's not going to be by getting to the basket or by drawing fouls or by getting layups. It's going to be by taking pull-up mid-range jump shots. And I think that maybe that's where the psychological stuff comes in, but it's just, you know, that, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm from Dallas and I'm antagonistic towards Rondo, but it almost seems like maybe he's taking advantage of that, of like Isaiah Thomas.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. You know, I just, you know, if the Celtics after this series, and like this would never happen, but if I was, you know, a sports psychologist or something, and I were to determine somehow provably that the reason why they lost this game, or lost the series rather, is because Isaiah Thomas's sister died, I'd just be like, dude, I'm really sorry. Like, that sucks. And I don't know. I just sort of hope Boston fans, and this would have been an interesting thing to bring up with him, I hope all the Boston fans who do feel that way, although there's no real way to prove one or the other, I would hope that, you know, they would continue to be supportive, but you know how Boston fans can be. I think that they've been good so far, but
yeah,
you know, whatever. I mean, you're over here, you know, talking smack about this great front office, Garpacz. You're not looking forward to that.
Are you celebrating the holiday the way Fred Hoiberg seemed like he was today with his quote that he said Rajon Rondo has been a rock for this team all year? Like, I think Fred's been celebrating the holiday a little early today.
Well, I mean, you were saying with the young guys, I think maybe in a way he has been. He's been really interesting this year. The relationship, well, first, I want to say, like, this is not something that he's ever done before in his career, taking on the veteran role. You know what? It does make me think, though, he's talked a lot about wanting to be a coach. Now I'm starting to be convinced that maybe that would work.
And people have said all throughout the media that, like, guys that know him closely have talked about, like, his constantly being in the film room, and like players just repeat this, and it's the same thing that I hear that constantly from Rajon Rondo.
But he's crazy though. That's the thing. Like, it's not his brain. He's a super genius, but like, he's a madman.
I mean, how does that translate to coaching though? I mean, that in a way, like, there's been some crazy coaches out there before that have had success, and I feel like guys would buy into what Rondo would do as a coach, and this is all like really hypothetical, but what he's done with those young guys and the way he's gotten them to get more out of them and like take them under his wing, I think it's shown a lot more than maybe at times what Wade and Butler have done this year as far as what they were brought, like what Wade especially was brought in to do. Is he was supposed to lead this team, and to be honest with you, for a lot of this year I didn't see a whole lot of leadership from Wade, and you know what, for that fact I didn't see a whole lot of leadership from anybody on this team, and that was the constant question throughout this season. And finally it's like, Wade Butler and Rondo, the guys that you wanted to lead this team and be examples for these young guys that they're trying to develop, they're finally doing that here in playoff games when it really matters. So it's honestly mind-blowing that the Bulls are playing this well and they finally found it to click. And Fred Hoiberg, I got to give him credit too.
No, you don't.
I have to. Yes, I have to. Just these two games. That he's made adjustments and why not?
Okay, look, the only adjustments that they're making are that they're getting lucky that the Celtics are missing shots, and you know, like I'm saying, they're collapsing into the paint on Isaiah Thomas drives. So there's three guys in the paint to rebound ball. I mean, that's why they're getting these rebounds is because because there's a miss from the corner three, and because they're closing in like that, that's a dangerous gamble. And it's something that I think 9 times out of 10, and you know, the analytics prove it, you know, even if Coach Fizdale doesn't think that they do, but the analytics prove that like, that's a dangerous wager to make offensively or defensively, honestly, shooting a ton of threes. But and then secondarily, I mean, he's not conducting the defense. And I think that the discussion around coaching in the NBA for good reason is always, how does the defense look? Because on the offensive end, it's mostly about superstar talent. On the defensive end, coaching comes into play a whole lot more. And defensively, it's all Rondo. So, like, what gives? And next up, right, he didn't coach Robin Lopez into being 3 feet taller and he didn't coach Amir Johnson into not being able to jump and rebound. You know, like I don't see Hoiberg's impact on this series whatsoever. I think all of the reasons why you would make the argument why the Bulls are winning are because of other people who aren't Hoiberg, and all of the reasons that the Celtics are losing have nothing to do with Hoiberg as well, of course. And I think that we have 82 games worth of data to suggest that perhaps Hoiberg is a bottom five NBA coach. And I am completely unconvinced of the opposite because I don't see his hand on these wins. I just don't.
I was trying to be a little bit of a optimistic Bulls fan. I guess you're right. I guess in a sense,
of course
I can agree
with everything. Did you hear that argument?
I can agree with everything you just said. And to me, that's how I felt all season. But I think a lot of this, like, it stems back to what we originally were talking about with this, the chemistry of this team and finding leadership on this team as far as on the court. And when Fred doesn't have to constantly be micromanaging the locker room and the atmosphere that's going on with this team every single day, I think it makes it easier for him to do the basic things that NBA coaches are supposed to do when they're supposed to be successful. And you know what? I found something interesting too, and I don't know if a lot of coaches in the NBA do this, but I noticed something that I think he translated from college, and it was interesting, especially in game two. So the Celtics went on a couple little short runs when the Bulls were up 10, 15 at one point. And I remember specifically the Celtics had made 3 straight baskets like real quick within 15, 20 seconds. Fred Hoiberg kept calling timeouts during these short little stretches. Maybe coaches do that in the NBA, but I feel like more times than not, NBA players are going to figure it out on some of these stretches, and you see them call timeouts when it gets to like a 14-2 run, a 16-4 run. In college, it's kind of the same way, where he kind of brings players back in, regroups them. That's kind of just, I guess, a basic coaching aspect that you're supposed to have. So, I mean, I didn't see that a lot from him the regular season, but I thought it was an interesting note to make. But I want to talk more specifically about this front office, because I've got a lot to say about them too.
Dude, why
I think you were going to touch on something about that.
Why can't you just revel in this team being good right now? Like, why?
I'm all in. I bought in. I already said it after game two. I'm bought in. Whatever they want to do, I'm in. And I'm done. I'm done screaming and yelling about the front office.
Oh, you want to say nice things?
unless it comes with somehow getting a glimpse of the future in a player that is established, then no.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and we'll fast forward to after the Wizards sweep the Bulls with a 20-point differential, because that matchup is a smoke show for the Bulls. I'm sorry.
I know. They played awful against the Wizards this whole entire
season.
Oh,
boy. It's going to be real bad. All that optimism and team chemistry that Rondo is talking about is going to evaporate real fast. But, yeah, okay. So let's go ahead. I'm all about doom and gloom. You know, it's 420. We got a little high there. now we can get a little bit low. So, all right. So Garpax, well, so what's the move? I haven't looked at the draft board to see who the oldest prospect is. So, I don't know who they're going to,
Now that Grayson Allen has decided to go back to Duke for his senior year, then I think that kind of blew up, Garpax's entire thinking, like, oh, let's go get this established guy, you know, played at Duke all three out of the 4 years, but now he's going back. So
Rondo and Grayson, like, man, what a backcourt.
Seriously, a hell of a lot of tripping and a lot of guys getting irritated with his play and some unproductive shooting and not athletic players on the floor, like we were pitched in the summer of 2016, younger, more athletic. But I think at the end of this season, their postgame presser, their postseason presser that they do, and this is their annual press conference that they hold. They don't do any other interviews throughout the year, or they'll do them on like Easter Sunday in at like 8 a.m., which they like to do a lot. They like to do these like weird, like timed interviews. And a lot of people don't know this, but they don't set up regular interviews like some GMs and some people that are running the front office do regularly with media in the city. And maybe it's because they've been so critical to these guys, but that's a whole different story. But I think what you're going to hear out of these guys' mouth, especially if the Bulls do win this series, is this was a successful season. We got back into the playoffs. We were 500. We developed a couple young guys. We still have Jimmy. We've got Wade if he wants to come back. We've got Rondo if we want to keep him around for next year. And Rajon Rondo's already said that he wants to come back. So they're going to say, well, we've got this core intact. We make a couple small moves here and there to kind of, I guess, supplement what they have already. And it's not a whole lot on that bench. They think that probably they'll be a 45 to 48 win team next year. And it's crazy to think that. But that's going to be going through their heads and being spewed out of their mouths to the media after the season's over.
Well, I mean, you know, I think a semi-competent front office, they're right, presuming that they make good moves in the offseason. I mean,
we're not talking about a semi-competent front office here, though.
Yeah, yeah. You remember that episode we had when I think I played like Beethoven's 15th or whatever during the end of his night? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That didn't end up happening. They kicked the can down the road a little bit. Well, so Jordan, I didn't really introduce you. Well, I mean, I did, but I didn't let you introduce yourself, I guess, to the listeners out there. Do you know this is my first show live on Dash?
It is, and this is wonderful. There's been so much. I've been pressing it, and this Dash Radio is amazing, and all the stations on Dash Radio are fantastic, and to be the first sports station on Dash, I think is exciting and it's awesome. And there's not really a better sport to be a part of this radio station than it is basketball, especially the way it's been blowing up like digitally and on the media side. I think this is wonderful, and we've got such a great core of guys that are going to be hosting shows every single day. And I think it's a lot of different perspectives, and you can see like just the perspectives of me bringing me on, and then who you had on in the first half hour. It's a ton of different minds talking about basketball for every person's perspective out there, which I think is really awesome. But the Debatables, I'm Jordan Malley. I host the Debatables, my co-host Matt Peck. It's kind of been interesting. This podcast has been sort of like what the Bulls have been doing, kind of plugging and playing co-hosts. But finally, Matt Peck came on. He's been the co-host for a few weeks now, and he does great work. He writes for the Bulls at Sports Mockery. Me and him have a lot of the same opinions. So if you like yelling at the front office, you like hearing what the Bulls didn't do rather than what they did do, at least for right now, that's your show to go to, the Debatables on Almighty Baller. We're on Thursdays from 5 to 6 a.m. Central Time and then 8 to 9 Central Time.
Well, so isn't that from 6 to 7 Eastern?
Yeah, 6 to 7 Eastern. I forget Eastern time. Eastern time is probably the standard. We should
is
go
Chicago
with.
Is Chicago in Eastern time?
That's Chicago's in Central, but it's weird. You go like 2 hours east, and they're in Eastern time.
Well, you know, just listen to every Almighty Baller Radio show. That's what you should do. And
agreed.
Yeah, you know, there are all these great Dash radio stations that, I mean, like, not so awesome that you should go listen to them instead of this one, but in addition to this one, you should go listen to them. And it's really given me a lot of respect for, I mean, we have this great podcast network, right? And then we take this foray into radio, and this is really, really hard, you know? And everything's coming together really well, but it's just, I mean, it's fantastic that Dash Radio has been able to put together like 80 different stations. And I personally consider myself to be the Snoop Dogg of the station, or the Kendall Jenner, maybe, of the station. you know, with you know, they have their own stations on Dash.
Are you doing Pepsi commercials now? Oh, is that Kendall Jenner or is that Kylie?
That would be that would be the best sponsorship, man. I'm gonna have to get some people on the phone about that. But well, anyways, I guess we're tuning out. This is well, first, Jordan, let me say goodbye to you really quick. Thanks for coming on and talking about Bulls.
Thanks for letting me yell about the Bulls for a little while. Hopefully we get past this first round and then we can hopefully keep talking about which would be probably a Wizards domination in the second round. But we'll see. I'm excited for Friday.
Yep. All right. Well, make sure you tune into the Debatables, everyone. And Jordan, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Bye. And everyone out there, it's just me now. Just me and you, the listener. Maybe you're in a car and it's you and your buddies. Thanks for, I mean, if you're getting a group activity together to listen to my show, that's dedication right there. And speaking of dedication, I'm going to have to close out here really quick so I don't cut into whoever's time is up next. But whoever it is, make sure that you don't tune out the way that I'm tuning out. Follow at Almighty Ballin on Twitter. Go ahead, check out the rest of the network. Just keep listening to Dash. If you're on Dash, thank you for subscribing to my podcast. If you're listening to this in podcast form, please just go, you know, go listen to all the other shows, because as great as the show was, everyone else is better. I'm the worst, you know, I'm the worst show on the network, which I'm, you know, it's great. But anyways, at the start of the show, that was Larry H. Russell at CLNS_LHR. You just heard Jordan Malley from the Debatables, and we're excited to be here on Dash, and definitely download that app. Thank you so much, everyone. And we're going to go ahead. Start our cool lean out music here. The new one that Larry so kindly mentioned that we have. And then we'll be done. Just in time. It's our first live show. I think it went pretty well. So if you don't think it did, feel free. You know, after you follow me at Almighty Ballin, you can, you know, send me a message, shoot me a DM, say that I'm bad at radio. I wouldn't appreciate that. But you're certainly welcome to. Thank you for listening, everyone out there. And thank you for supporting this network.